Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Jim Willis. First, a couple of announcements. As you can see, we are on the road. I am filming my docuseries. I'm in the heart of South Louisiana right now. Should be back sometime next week. This has been an amazing trip so far. I want to thank everyone for all their support and donations. We still need your help. This trip is incredibly expensive. Gas is crazy, and I'm completely self-funded. If you would like to help in any way with a donation, we have links in the description. Anything is greatly appreciated. Any donation of $80 or more, you're going to get a one-on-one, one-hour Q&A session with yours truly, as well as your name in the credits of every episode. This is a huge undertaking, and we want to be able to bring you an epic docuseries unlike anything ever before. So if you appreciate our content, if you have appreciated all the content we've brought you over the past 7+ years and you'd like to help with the donation, we have links in the description. Thank you for all the support so far. If you'd like to help any other way, email me, forbiddenknowledgenews@gmail.com. Check out our website, forbiddenknowledge.news. It's the home of the Forbidden Knowledge Network. That's where we feature some of your favorite podcasts. You can always get every new episode of Forbidden Knowledge News on Rockfin, Odyssey, Rumble, and all podcast platforms. Our social media is on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And please check us out on Rockfin. This is a great way to support us. Rockfin is where you get our premium content, as well as all the premium content from every creator on Rockfin. Just go to rockfin.com/FKNplus or click that link in the description. All of our links, including donations, are in the description. Today, I want to welcome back to the show Jim Willis. He earned a master's degree in religion and entered the Protestant ministry for 40 years. He is the author of 13 books on spirituality and lost civilizations, and he served as an adjunct college professor in the fields of world religions and instrumental music. He is also a guest lecturer speaking about topics ranging from historical studies to contemporary spirituality. Jim, welcome back. How you doing?
Real good, Chris. Boy, it's been a long time. I think the last time we talked, we were all in the throes of COVID or just getting ready for it or something like that. So
yeah, I think it was at the conference. I'm glad we got through that. Knowledge News Conference.
That's right. That's right. How long ago was that now?
That was almost 2 years ago.
Was that like two years ago? Ah, tell me, where does the time go?
I wonder the same thing.
I don't understand. Seems like we were just talking yesterday. I don't know where it goes.
Yeah.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, great to see you too, man. I can't wait to get into this. We're going to be discussing your new book, American Cults, Cabals, Corruption, and Charismatic Leaders. This is great. It covers everything from manipulative and exploitative leaders like Jim Jones, Jim Baker, David Berg, David Koresh, many others. Political Ponzi and metaphysical and science schemes, end times, doomsday cults. This has everything. But before we get into this, Jim, like we were just saying, it has been a while. Remind the audience a little bit about yourself and what led you to write this particular book.
Well, there's two things that led me to write this book. The first one is probably the simplest and maybe the most profound. When a publisher calls you and says, I want a big book on cults, that usually helps. You'd have a tendency to put aside everything else you're doing. But actually, to be honest, we've talked about it before, but it's been a while for your new viewers. I was in the Christian ministry for 40 years. I still am an ordained Christian minister. I haven't been in a church for 10, 15 years now, but all during the time I was growing up in the church, a lot of cults were spawning off Christianity. We had Jim Baker, and we had Jim Jones, and we had Jimmy Swaggart, and a lot of those things. For a while, I wondered why all these ministers were named Jim and were starting cults. But, I grew up in it. I kind of lived it. And so this gave me an opportunity to take about 40 years worth of experience and put it in the confines of a book. And at my ripe old age of 77, I like to take what I've learned and, try to put it out there and make sure it's going to outlive me. And so that's where the book came from. And yet it was, you would think that we would have learned our lessons. I mean, you would think that Waco and which was just in the news last week again, Ruby Ridge and some of those other big cults, everything from old Father Divine back in the old days to the Branch Davidians and all the rest, you would think that we would learn our lesson. But the latest statistics that I've read said that there are something like 5,000 to 6,000 cults operating in the United States today. And I came to the conclusion during that long time of COVID that when people are secluded one from another, when they're spending a lot of time by themselves, a lot of times at home, just staring at a computer screen and getting all of their feedback from computer news, internet news, rather than being out there in the world and talking to real people, it tends to promote a certain amount of isolationism. And when people are worried to go out, we had to wear masks for so long. And when you're worried to go out and breathe the air, you start to feel a little vulnerable. And when your job is at stake and when you wonder how you're going to pay the bills, you feel like, I've got no hope here. And that's precisely the attitude that cult leaders prey on, vulnerability and the feeling of aloneness, the feeling that nobody is out there for me. And I think cults are flourishing now more than ever, just because people want something, people need something. That's why, shows like yours are so important, because they connect people. You're doing important work, Chris. Keep it up, because it really helps people find a community and ideas and something to talk about, something to think about. So this book was it was a tough write in some ways. People say, how long did it take to write it? About 6 months. How long did it take to research it? About 50 years. But 6 months of writing, in one sense, it was a labor of love, because I could bring all this stuff up and expose it and try to put things in perspective. On the other hand, boy, when I finished it, I was wiped. I was really depressed. It taught me a lot about American history. You know, just from the very beginning, the pilgrims come over here to Boston. And we think, oh, they're far-seeing patriots. No, they were called a cult. They were called separationists. They were kicked out of where they were, basically. And they came over here to America, and their idea was, I'm going to have a city set on a hill, a bright, shining light. And as soon as they were there in numbers, what did they start? They started acting just like a cult. They started saying, we're the only way. It's our way or the highway. We're going to burn the witches. We're going to throw out the Quakers. And they started doing this whole thing that cults do. And they had a lot of their charismatic leaders, guys like Cotton Mather, for instance, who went to the Salem witch trials and just sat there and watched and didn't say anything, didn't preach anything. So we're a country that's founded on cults when you come right down to it. And that's, I don't want to say anything, you know, totally bad about cults. I mean, because sometimes cults, you know, don't necessarily have bad intentions. Theologians today talk about the early Christian church. They called the Jesus cult embedded within Jerusalem, within Judaism. And that's what it was. Jesus was a Jew. Peter was a Jew. And a lot of them at that time had the idea that, well, if you want to become a Christian, first you got to become Jewish. And there was that big argument that you read about in Acts chapter 15 in the Bible, where Paul was on one side and Peter was on the other side. Peter was saying, if you're going to be a member of our cult, you got to join Judaism. And Paul was saying, no, let's open it up to everybody. And they had the big fight. And Paul writes about it later in Galatians and how he and Peter almost came to blows over it. And, you know, these are things that people don't tell us. So I was really happy to be able to get it out there. And it was a labor of love. It really was.
That's great. And you're absolutely right. We're surrounded by cults everywhere. It's hard to tell what is not a cult. And just like you were saying, much of the founding of our country is based off of what you would consider a cult as well. And when you look around right now, the way the world has changed just in the past 2 to 3 years, we have now made science a cult. Technology has become a new cult. The medical industry has become, even some people's jobs can be considered a cult, the way that they are representing themselves and the ideologies behind some of these things, especially like science and technology that we've seen lately, have this mentality that we're supposed to just blindly follow and obey authority. What do you think this is? Do you think that it's just that we need a savior figure? Do we need a leader figure at all times so that we can feel protected or more comfortable about ourselves? What is it that we always need to participate in some kind of cult?
I just don't know. It's so subtle. Especially since the book came out, I've got a lot of people calling me or writing to me and saying, is this a cult? Is that a cult? I belong to a certain church. Is that turning into a cult? And I don't like to put that word cult on groups or organizations. But what I like to say instead is there are certain characteristics, certain methodologies that cults use to gather people in. And if you're involved in any kind of an organization that shows any kind of these methodologies, then I just tell them, be careful. We all want an answer, a simple answer. We want a bumper sticker answer to our question. You know, our attention spans are shorter. We don't read as much. And as a result, the stuff we do try to take in is usually pretty concise, and we want the easy answer. And that's a terrible thing. So if you're feeling the need to have a savior figure from on high, and whether that's a political figure, whether that's an economic guru kind of thing, whether it's a Well, a lot of people are looking to outer space. They're hoping like crazy for aliens to come and land here. Maybe they'll lead us out of our doldrums. But the common denominators you've got to look for, number one, the clear-cut number one methodology that cults use is that cults usually have a recognizable figure, a founder or a current leader. And he, and I use the word he because it's almost always a he. There are a few exceptions that I've written about in my book, but most cult leaders are male. They are charismatic leaders, and they're able to speak a language that followers understand. And they instinctively know how to push the proper buttons when it comes to mobilizing people. And the cult leader will speak to their needs, even if they themselves might not be aware of what those needs are. I mean, all they know is they're feeling a need for something. They don't know what it is. Now, cult leaders are almost always brilliant manipulators. But that shouldn't be surprising because cult leaders are usually, they grow into one of two different categories of psychological being. First is narcissist. We see them everywhere. We see them in politics. We see them in religion. We see them in education and in academia. They generally feel, entitled, grandiose. They are at the center, not only their own story, but everybody else's story. And usually narcissists lack any real empathy. They're more than happy to throw somebody under the bus if it'll save their life. You know, they don't have that empathy that says, oh, these poor people are giving up so much to join my group. And they just really don't care about that. And they display an unmistakable arrogance. And they're normally in search of validation. Now, narcissists might still feel a small sense of shame when they do wrong, but it's usually because, not that they did something wrong, but that they got caught. And that's what usually, but it's very easy for a narcissist to grow into a sociopath or even a psychopath who don't feel any shame. And that's why generally, believe it or not, sociopaths can pass lie detector tests. The reason they don't feel any shame is because they honestly feel they can do no wrong because they're the ones performing the deed. So if they do something, it's obviously justified because they're the ones doing it. We all have friends like that. A lot of your listeners, I'm sure, have friends of people who manipulate you by saying, "I'm only telling you this for your own good." You know, have you heard that one before?
Oh, yeah.
You always act this way. Or if your integrity is questioned by means of passive aggressive domination, and you understand that kind of manipulation I'm talking about. Cult leaders do this instinctively. They're master manipulators, and they use their ability to their advantage. And cults usually develop a hierarchy. People start out at the bottom as just believers, you know, new converts, newbies. But then when they demonstrate both talent and allegiance to the leader, especially allegiance to the leader, generally they rise to positions of leadership themselves. So cults are almost always homegrown. And when you see something like that, beware. Mm. And it's not just in a religious sense. I got a kick out of when I talked to some of my friends who belong to organizations, economic organizations, which frankly I think are cults because they use all the cultic stuff. Their bills aren't being paid. They're not getting there on time with their payments and everything else. And so what am I going to do? And then this friend says, "Oh, I joined this group, man, you got to come. We're having a retreat this weekend at the local hotel, and come on, I'll bring you and you come." So you go to the parking lot and you're feeling vulnerable and you're feeling susceptible and you're feeling like you can't pay your bills and you're feeling like, oh, everything is kind of falling apart. And all of a sudden, man, you're met in the parking lot with people who have it all together. And you go into the hotel and the music is blasting and people are smiling and they're shaking your hand and they're making you feel welcome. And then they start to getting the testimonies. You know, the people stand up there and say, "Man, I had no money at all. And I invested my last $5 in this starter kit. And now I'm driving a pink Cadillac," you know, that kind of thing. And you say, "Wow." And you testimony after testimony. And then they bring in the big gun, the talented talker, usually he's a celebrity or something like that. And they stand up there. The celebrity says, Jeff, I know you've only got $10, $15 to your name, but if you invest that in this starter kit and buy this stuff, then you can go out and you can turn it to millions of dollars. And so you do it and it's wonderful and you're all excited and people are so happy to have you and you feel like you're part of a family. These are my kind of people, you know, that kind of thing. And then you go home and you sell a little product to your friends or to your neighbors and you got no better off than you were before. So you start to say, well, what am I doing wrong? So you call up somebody else who's part of the same group and they say, oh, it must be something you're doing. We've got another group meeting this weekend. Why don't you come with me? And you go there and it's the same thing. Only this time they want a little more money because you don't want a starter kit. Now you got to have the advanced kit. So you give a little more money and all that. And the music is so great and the people are so friendly. And this just goes on and on until pretty soon you've got so much invested. And then you start saying to your friends, why isn't it working? And they say, well, it can't be the group's fault. I mean, you heard all their testimonies. Must be your fault, right? Something's wrong with you. Maybe your family is holding you back. Maybe they're not giving you the advantage of their support. Like maybe you need to draw away from those kind of people, your old friends, your family. Get away from them. Start hanging out with us more. You know, we're more positive. And so you do that. Pretty soon you got so much invested, you can't get out of it. You know, if not only the financial investment and the time commitment, you just got so much emotional stuff invested in it. You say, what am I going to do? And pretty soon you're head over heels and caught in it. And I got to say, man, it makes me feel terrible to say this, but as a Christian minister, I use some of these same techniques myself without realizing what I was doing. Man, you come to my church on a Sunday, everybody's upbeat. We're trained to go out and meet you and shake your hand. The music is pumping. The people are singing. The talented talker, which in some cases was me, stands up and says, oh, man, God loves you, and Jesus has a plan for your life and all this kind of stuff. And man, you join it. I mean, I'm not saying that churches are cults, but we use a lot of the same kind of cultic methodology. It makes me feel terrible, makes me feel ashamed, but what else was I going to do? I mean, how else do you do it? Whenever you get two or three you're gathered together, somebody has to pass the collection plate and play the music. Mm. So I don't
know. It's fascinating, man. It's definitely interesting. Yeah, now, your book, like the title, it focuses on American cults.
Yeah.
Now, why do you think that the United States has been such a fertile environment for cult influence?
Wow. I don't know, but we certainly have been. Now, just look at our past. We had Ann Lee, who was the founder of the Shakers, which was originally a cult. We got Joseph Smith, founder of the Latter-day Saints, Mormons, who were originally a cult and kicked out of town from here there. We've got Charles Russell, who began the Jehovah's Witnesses, and they were considered a cult. Ellen G. White left the Millerite movement to begin the Adventist. I don't know. There seems to be something in the American psyche that wants to say, save us from ourselves, or save me from myself. At the beginning, it was really hard for George Washington not to become the president. I mean, they wanted him to become the president of the United States. He didn't want to do it. And the reason he didn't was because he was afraid of this particular thing. The people were saying, it's too much trouble for us to do it. We got to look to somebody who can tell us what to do and save us. And you have no, every 4 years, you can go to a political rally, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, their national committee, and you can see the guy who's going to save us from ourselves. Sometimes, you know, he's a Republican, sometimes he's a Democrat, but this is always the guy that's going to come in and save ourselves. And he's got the idea. Maybe American people are lazy. Maybe we just are saying we can't do it ourselves. We got to have somebody else help us, or at least give it to somebody else to save us. Something in our psyche just calls out for a savior. And I don't really know why. But it's scary to me. It really is scary, and I don't know what the answer is going to be. I really don't.
Now, some of the most interesting and probably most devastating or I guess you could say tragic types of cults have been the metaphysical doomsday or even extraterrestrial cults.
Yeah.
These have caused a lot of tragedy over the years with mass suicides and things like that. And I'd just like to get your some of the information, some of the most profound information that you have come up with for your book regarding some of these metaphysical and even extraterrestrial cults.
Yeah. The charismatic leader stands up there in front and he not only says, I am your leader. He says either something like, I am God, or I come from the planet Qumran or something like that, you know. And everything is falling apart down here, but stick with me and I'll lead you out. And a lot of this has its formations in Christian churches too, because we are really big on the second coming and the book of Revelation and the book of Daniel and all these apocryphal literature that talks about the end of the world. And we're really big on that. And when the leader comes along and says, follow me, and then it starts to fall apart and you say, what am I going to do? I've got so much emotional investment here. I just can't turn my back on it. What am I going to do? And he says, drink the Kool-Aid and follow me. We will, you know, shed these mortal bodies and go to live amongst the stars or something like that. Or we are the ones. The Branch Davidian cult, they weren't an extraterrestrial cult, but here was David Koresh working on the book of Revelation. He wanted to do a book on the book of Revelation, and he had his own unique interpretation, like so many cult leaders do. They have all, a lot of them use the book of Revelation. And so he was telling his people that we are the special people, and he would give them Bible verses, you know, come out from among them and be ye separate. You know, we are the chosen ones. We are the ones that God is looking after. And at the end, it's going to come with violence. So we have to get a lot of guns to protect ourselves. It's going to come with noise and confusion and lightning and thunder. So we have to be ready for that. It's going to come when they come after us and cut us off and everything else. So here they were out in the compound there in Waco, Texas. And the FBI was called in. They really had to do something. I mean, there were people who trying to get out and couldn't, or they had real suspicions of child abuse that was going on and other kinds of things that were going on there. So the FBI had to do something. So what did they do? They played it by the book. I think it was the biggest mistake that they ever made when it comes to dealing with cults, the possible only other exception being Ruby Ridge. But they played it by the book, and they set up all the sound systems, and they blasted loud rock music 24 hours a day to disorient the people. And all night, people couldn't sleep because there were the helicopters flying over, and there was the noise, there was the confusion, there was the lights going back and forth. In other words, they reproduced exactly the conditions that David Koresh had told these people was going to come at the end of days. And when they cut off all the phone service and the people couldn't, you know, there were no cell phones back then. When they cut out all the phone service and everything else, the people couldn't contact anybody else in the world. They were stuck. So they didn't know it was just happening in Waco, Texas. They thought it was happening all over the world. And they said, here it is, just like our leader told us. It's coming with all the signs and wonders and war and rumor of war and everything else. And so by reproducing those conditions exactly, they made the people really just more paranoid, not less. And as a result, when the smoke bombs started going off and when the fire started, who knows who started it? Nobody really knows to this day who started it. Place was burned out and all those people died in the fires and in the shooting and in everything else. And it was just an absolute tragedy, all caused because a cult leader convinced the people that his way was the way to go, and they believed it. They went along with it. I don't know. Call it something in the American temperament that just wants to have that savior show us the way.
Yeah, man, it's insane. And you briefly mentioned some of the commonalities between these charismatic cult leaders, especially the more metaphysical ones. What are some of the more commonalities, maybe some psychological traits? personal types of behaviors that these individuals displayed that may have been similar to each other?
Yeah. Well, the cult leaders, of course, are at the head of the whole thing, but they have usually, by the time the cult usually gets known, they have got a whole lot of their own followers who just are willing to follow them through thick and thin. And pretty soon the leader can do no wrong. He can say no wrong. In America, we have the tendency to say if a person is expert in one field, we tend to say he's expert in another field. It really kind of usually bothers me when scientists, for instance, who are wonderful mathematicians or wonderful in the field of physics or in quantum physics or something like that, then start talking about religion. When it comes to talking about physics and math, I will take my hat off to them. But when it comes to talking about religion, I have many hats, you know. And we all feeling that just because they're good in one field, mean they're something else. A strange thing happened really during the 70s, the early 70s. Two things went on at the same time that gave it this metaphysical thing. In the religious community, Hal Lindsey wrote his book, The Late Great Planet Earth. And it went to the top of the New York Times bestseller list and stayed there for 10 years. It was all about his take on how the world was going to end. And he had people in religious institutions all around the world. Still, a lot of evangelical ministers still have that book on their shelves. But he had them looking up, waiting for the return of Jesus Christ. At the same time, Carl Jung's book on aliens and flying saucers began to get a real following. And people began to look up in the skies, and there were reports of UFOs everywhere. So we had the religious establishment looking into the skies to see the return of Jesus, a religious figure. And we had a lot of the secular people, including the followers of Carl Jung, looking up into the skies to see evidence of UFOs, alien figures who were going to come down and save us from ourselves. And this went hand in hand. We started looking to the skies. What's going to come? What's going to happen? And it was that whole metaphysical, either religious or secular, that whole metaphysical thing within us. I've given vent to that sometimes myself. Somebody says, do you really believe that aliens are up there and they're going to take us over? And I say, sometimes I really hope so. Because, man, if they don't, we're in serious trouble.
Right. You know, yeah, definitely.
I like to believe that somewhere in this great universe, there was a civilization that managed to get through this phase and, you know, managed to do something and learn their lessons so they can come back here and tell us how to do it.
Well, there's some pretty interesting things going on with UFOs lately.
Oh,
I mean,
sure
if the government and the Pentagon is a UFO cult, I mean, which is probably not too far off from what they really are, you know, they're talking about motherships and possible probes coming from the mothership. And
I know it. I know, you know,
UFOs.
I find it the strangest thing that as soon as we were able to enter into the space age, what we now call the space age, as soon as we were able to put a satellite out there that would break free of Earth's gravitational pull and get out there into the galaxy and maybe even move outside the galaxy, what was the first thing we did? We sent Voyager. And we had Carl Sagan do that famous golden record to tell people who we are and to say hello in 50 different languages or whatever it was, and even instructions how to play the record. Can you imagine? That was before cassettes we even did that. We sent a record, you know. And so we sent this thing out there, and it was the first thing. What were we doing? We were saying, is there anybody out there? Hi. And we can't somehow get it through our heads that if we wanted to do that, chances are some civilization out there somewhere in the universe, which is maybe billions of years older than us, maybe they wanted to do it too, you know? Mm. I frankly, on purely emotional reasons, I love the idea that we're being watched and that somewhere out there, there's a benevolent civilization that is being careful and will save us from ourselves before we blow ourselves up because they learned the lessons that we didn't. Mm. And you know, this isn't a new thought. We talk about this. Oh, this is New Age. No, it isn't New Age. Plato, when he wrote the Timaeus, we're talking 2,000, 400, 500 years ago. when he talked about the planet, the civilization that he called Atlantis. And whether your listeners believe in Atlantis as a real physical place or a metaphysical place or a metaphor doesn't make any difference for the illustration. But he said,
hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Then this was 2,400 years ago. For many generations, he said, they obeyed the laws and they loved the divine. I love that. They loved the divine to which they were akin. And they reckoned that qualities of character were far more important than their present prosperity. So they bore the burden of their wealth and possessions lightly and did not let their high standard of living intoxicate them or make them lose their self-control. But then he went on to say, but when the divine element in them became weakened and their human traits became predominant, they ceased to be able to carry their prosperity with moderation. Boy, he said that 2,400 years ago, and you think he's talking about us, you know?
Yeah.
The Apostle Paul said the same thing 2,000 years ago in the book of 1 Timothy. He said, mark this. He said, there will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves. They will be lovers of money. They will be boastful and proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love. They will be unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, but treacherous and rash and conceited, and lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. They will have a form of godliness. They'll have religion, but they will deny its power. And these people have been saying this for more than 2,000 years. So I think they have us pegged. They seem like they're talking about us.
You also cover the Church of Scientology a bit. What is some of the most interesting things that you found out about this organization when looking into it?
Oh, the Church of Scientology is a tough one, because there are so many people who swear by it and so many people who swear at it. When I went into it, I had to go into it because a lot of people call Scientology a cult. Whether it is or not, well, people are going to have to make their own decisions. But we know you really have to get into it before you can start figuring out what it's all about. It's a gradual process. And some of the people, Tom Cruise, for instance, and people like that, were very intelligent people, will find themselves farther and farther in, and they will imply that in order to really get the idea of what this is all about, you have to become a much more deeply embedded member first. And a lot of cults will do that. And Scientology does that. I don't want to just talk about it in a few words because I don't think that would be fair. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who are members of the Church in Scientology who have really been helped by it. On the other hand, there have been a lot of people who have left who claim that, well, it isn't all it's cracked up to be. And there's a lot of falsehood and there's a lot of these methodologies that I was talking about earlier that are used. So for those who are involved in Church of Scientology or those who are thinking about it, I don't want to, you know, discourage you if it's helping you. But if they keep asking you for money, If they keep asking you to get it farther involved, if they keep asking you to put aside your family and your friends who may be holding you back, well, those are cult methods. Be careful. That's all I can say to anybody. Be careful.
Mm. I find it so interesting that we still have things like doomsday cults with after the amount of times that the world was supposed to end. And guess what? We're still here. Yeah. And they have these insane cult leaders that get large amounts of people to do very terrible things up into and including committing suicide because they're under the belief that the world will end or they're going to be this massive reward for them if they follow their leader's orders. So this is another big one. And what were some of the most interesting things you found out about when you're looking into doomsday cults?
I found it very strange how often doomsday cults can operate in full view of the public, everybody knowing what's there, but nobody seems to recognize the problems. One person wrote to me complaining that I talked about the Gulf War, for instance. I couched it in terms of being a religious war fought between basically two religious cults. And they said, how can you possibly say such an outlandish thing as that? Well, think about it. On one hand, you've got an army consisting of people who are saying, Allah will prevail. We are being sent by Allah to do this. And on the other hand, you've got another army saying, Jesus be with our troops. May God bless our troops and everything else. Well, when both armies are calling on God to help them and saying that we are right because of what God says, how can you not call it a religious war? Of course it's a religious war, but people don't want to admit it because it's not being fought by religions. It's being fought by countries, armies. And yet, what's backing those armies? Well, people on both sides have the feeling that this is God on our side, or Allah on our side, or Jehovah on our side. You look at the same thing going on in Israel right now. It's terrifying to me to see what they call religious Jews, conservative and liberal, non-practicing Jews, going at each other. And yet, here we're talking about Judaism, 5,000 years old, and people in the name of God saying God wants this for us. It's a terrible thing. I often wondered about that. I'm kind of a war buff, and I can't help but think about what was going on in churches, on two churches, let's say, on the Sunday before Fort Sumter was bombed or shot at. You got religious people in the South, and they were quoting from the Bible on that Sunday, the Apostle Paul saying that slaves obey your masters. That says so in the Bible. Therefore, it's God's will, and we must go to war. Now you go to a church up north, and you got ministers up there in the north, and he's standing up there in a pulpit, and he's reading from the same Bible. He's reading from the same author, the Apostle Paul. And he turns to Galatians, and where Paul says there is no more slave nor free, there is no more this or that. It's all one in Christ. And so, the next week, these people were shooting at each other, killing at each other, all convinced that God was on their side. One of them because of what God said in Ephesians, and one of them because of what God said in Galatians. And basically, what was it? It was armies of the war calling down God to say that God is on our side. So basically forming these deathly cults. And thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people died in America's Civil War, half of them believing in Ephesians and half of them believing in Galatians. Same author, same everything else. Man, if that doesn't show what cult-like figures, I don't know. But that's the way cults operate. You can see the same thing in political parties today. Everybody's absolutely convinced, whether a Republican or Democrat, God is on our side. And we use a lot of those cultic methods. You go to a typical rally of somebody, either Republican or Democrat, and you're going to find that the music is blaring and the people are smiling and they're dancing, and these are my kind of people. And they go in there and they're full of it, full of enthusiasm, and they just know that God is with them, and this is God's leader, and all the rest of this stuff. Cultic.
Well, Abrahamic religions have been a cult that have been so powerful and efficient for controlling people and keeping people in line due to fear since the dawning of these religious practices. So, of course, that's going to be some of the most prominent cults that we're still seeing.
Yeah, that's right. Well, when you consider early Islam, for instance, and the jihad, you know, the idea that we're the desert soldiers, the desert warriors, you know, coming in off the desert and fighting. And then when you compare that, you say, oh, well, Christianity would never do that. Well, turn to the early books of Genesis. And here's God, in one sense, saying, thou shalt not kill. And two pages later, now go kill all the Canaanites. You know, that's jihad. That's all it is. Christianity the same way. When Christianity was fighting for its existence in the fourth century, there were Christians that didn't toe the line. So they wanted to push them out. So they excommunicated, even killed, put to death people like the Gnostic Christians or the valley of the village of up in the Qumran Hills. The same thing. It's just human history is just full of this. Remember at the beginning, I told you how discouraged I was after 6 months of writing. This is probably why we just don't seem to learn our lessons, that each one of us is a free and independent person, able to make our own decisions and make our own choices if we want to, and if we want to take the trouble, and if we want to think it through. But as soon as we turn those abilities, those ifs, over to somebody else and say, solve them for me, exactly, we're going to fail every time.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Now, another aspect that's very dangerous in the cult world is the sexual cults.
Oh,
things like
boy.
NXIVM, the Solanians. What were some of the most prominent aspects that you looked into that you can maybe discuss a couple of those aspects with us today?
Oh, and how many of them there are like this. My classic example was when Jim Jones was, before his cult really grew and before he went to Guyana and before they all drank the Kool-Aid, he was looking for help from another cult leader at the time. Well, he was considered a cult then. Nowadays, it's been around for a while. There's a saying in religion that cult plus time equals religion. But the group of that was following Father Divine in New York, and Jim Jones went to consult with Father Divine, who was farther down the path to cultdom than he was. And after they finished their thing, Jim Jones says to Father Divine, Father Divine, he says, sometimes the women in my congregation raise some unsettling feelings within me. What should I do? And Father Divine grinned at him and said, you must bring those feelings to the surface where you can then deal with them. And it doesn't take much of an excuse. And when a cult leader starts to get power, he starts to feel, well, mine is the spoils of war. And unfortunately, some of those spoils turn out to be either women or men or children or whatever. And they start to feel that somehow they're entitled to all this. And there have been some cults that, I wanted to take a shower as soon as I read about it. You know, there was just an article came out in the New York Daily News that did a spread on American cults. And the person who wrote the article said in the article, just, I think it was just last weekend it came out, it said that Willis delves into some cults that he says he didn't even want to really go into because they were too atrocious or too horrifying. And he said, trust me, trust Willis on this. I Googled some of them and it is terrible. Some of the things that go on, the sexual things, just in terms of outright torture, branding, stuff like that, you know, it's really terrible. It really is.
Now, had you looked much into high-level political-type cults that are used for blackmail and high-level sex trafficking, things like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sad to say, There is a long history in this country also in our political system of basically cult-like activities. A person gets too much power and then they can do no wrong. And it's something that's being discussed right now. If we turn on the news, is there anybody, again, who is above the law? Well, apparently in this country, we like to say no. But on the other hand, a lot of politicians get a free pass just because they're famous or because they're politicians. And there's a lot of that going on. It used to be ignored when the Kennedy brothers, for instance, all three of them were having their affairs. It used to be that the reporters wouldn't say anything about them. It was just understood. You just didn't do it. Well, nowadays, something like what they did, you know, sharing Marilyn Monroe as a sexual partner and everything else. And boy, the National Enquirer will have that one right off the bat. You know, you can't hide it quite so much nowadays, but it's real. And it's wherever cultic methodologies are used, whether it's in business, whether it's a boss who tries to take advantage of a secretary or a woman who is under him or something for some reason, or whether it's in the economic thing about rich people who just feel that they can buy whatever or whoever, anything like that. It really comes down to the same thing, that when we outgrow our bounds of morality and ethics, which is what happens in cults, when we feel that somehow we're above those, we just lose all sense of everything. And it's a terrible thing.
100%.
Common, but terrible.
Yeah. Now,
and again, you can go back in the Old Testament, you know, the King David did the same thing in the Old Testament. Solomon did the same thing in the Old Testament. King Ahab did the same thing. It's as old as the human race. And it doesn't say much for us. It really doesn't.
Now let's get into what is probably the most common and prominent cults that we're seeing in modern times is the online cults, social media cults. I guess some of the best examples we've seen of this lately is QAnon and things like this. What's the basis that you started off with whenever you started to look into social media cults?
Well, I was amazed at how much social media, you would think that with information available at our fingertips, that cults would be less prominent instead of more prominent. What I found was just exactly the opposite. With social media, especially combined social media with the last 3 years of COVID and isolation, you've got a person thinks, I can't be in a cult. I'm just sitting in my darkened basement or my darkened bedroom upstairs looking at my computer screen. How could I be part of a cult? But then you find other people who are doing the same thing. And you discover that you can get together and combine with these people. Before social media, and I'm not panning social media now because I think it's a wonderful thing. It's not a problem with the media. It's how we use it. But before social media came along, you could have all these little groups, might be two or three people who just gather together and share a cup of coffee or a beer or something after work and talk. And they have no idea that all around the country, there are hundreds of little groups like this meeting after work or meeting in somebody's house or meeting online. And pretty soon these 100 groups get together. And now these groups want to act as one. And now they can because they're connected, whereas we used to be protected from each other. Now they can just do that. And also, we now have the privilege of not just listening to, Walter Cronkite for a half hour every night. We can tune in our own news shows that tell us exactly the news we want to hear. And if this news is particular on a news show or a particular host is saying something we don't agree with, well, we can turn them off and find somebody that we do agree with. And as a result, we're not nearly as well-read and well-informed. And yet we think that because we're finding all of these dark little corners of the internet where other people don't seem to be, we think that somehow we're now superior. We're getting the real news just because we have to really look to find it. And so that becomes the news, and that's the news we believe in no matter what. And I've had a lot of discussions with people who are just absolutely convinced that black is white and white is black just because that's what they want to believe. And out there on social media, they can find a group of people who agree with them. It's really terrible. We should be open-minded. We should be open heart. We should be, you know, looking at everything, but we don't. We don't. Mm. We just want to enforce our own ignorance over and over and over again.
Well, we're at such a critical period right now, yeah, where right. Not only has all of our information become one of the most valuable assets on the planet. Data is like the new oil. That is like the new gold. And we are freely giving up our data and information online at all times. But what they're doing right now is, I think there's so much misinformation and disinformation being put out online through groups like QAnon and things like that, to where they are, it's easier for them to target people. If people latch on to some of this information, this false information, if enough people in this community latch on to this information that ends up not being real because it was a limited hangout, it was just put out there to throw us on the wrong path. If this keeps happening and people keep gravitating to that false information, it's going to shine a horrible light on us, and it's just going to be make it easier for us, for the establishment, to cancel us and to make us look like what they're trying to brand us as, conspiracy theorists. And now it's domestic terrorists. So we have to be very careful with the information that we gravitate to online, especially right now, because of the targeting that we're going through.
Yeah, boy, you said it. You're absolutely correct. And I don't blame just, you know, people who say, well, you know, it's I'm a conspiracy theorist, or I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't blame them, because the fact of the matter is that for generations, for thousands of years, people in power have been keeping secrets from us. You know, classic example, you know, Area 51 is probably filled with more conspiracies and more thoughts than any other place on Earth. And the reason is because the government hid it for so long and tried to cover it up for so long. They said, no, it's all over. We've stopped it. We've, you know, finished. And then years later, we found that they were still keeping Project Blue Book going, you know. The same thing with the Christian church. In I hate to say this, but there's a lot of theology that is very questionable in the Christian church. And I mean, theologians question it, and they argue about it, and they talk about it. But what happens? Well, when something comes up in the Bible that doesn't agree with our particular brand of theology, we figure, let's hide it under the rug. I just won't bring it up. You know, chances are my people aren't going to go out and read the Bible on their own anyway. So I'll just keep it quiet. I won't tell anybody. And we keep it down like that. When I wrote the book before this, Centering God, about the books that didn't make the final cut of the Bible, one of the things I had to do was go back into these church committees that met, especially early in the 4th century, to put together the Bible. And they kept the books they liked, and the books that they disagreed with, they swept under the rug. And as a result, people never found out about them. When we keep these kinds of secrets, when we are not open, we're just asking for conspiracy theories. Same thing with John Kennedy. You know, there's so many conspiracies about, you know, did Lee Harvey Oswald act by himself and everything else? Well, we never really investigated it. We said we did, but it's turning out now, as those materials are now open, that there were a lot of questions that they thought, well, if these questions get out to the American public, it'll be inconvenient, so forget it. I saw the same thing in academia of professors who stand up in front of college classes, and they teach the same thing year after year after year, and then something comes along to completely blow their ideas out of the water. What were they supposed to do? Tell all their old students, I'm sorry, I was wrong? No. So they just shoot the messenger. They just, you know, don't bring it up. If nobody knows about it, then I can just get away with saying the same thing I've been saying for years. Mm. In every field of, I mean, big business, come on. I mean, how many businesses don't want it to get out how much their CEOs are making in comparison to how much their guys on the line are making? You know, they don't want that information to come out because it'll make people upset, so they keep it quiet. Of course conspiracies are going to go crazy in a world like that. Mm. So it's a tragedy thing, and cults thrive on them. They just really thrive on them.
Now, it seems like for the most part, cults are made up of, at the top, very narcissistic, powerful men that just want to and have a great knowledge of how to brainwash and take advantage of women and children and younger people, right?
Yep, that's absolutely right. Power breeds corruption, and absolute power breeds absolute corruption. That's all there is to it. The more power a person gets, the more easy it is to abuse it. And that probably a pretty good definition of the cult right there. They begin with a founder who is, like as we said earlier, at least narcissistic, usually psychopathic. They develop a top-down hierarchy because the people who are right underneath in power, the cult leader, are getting all the rejects from the cult leader, you know, so they're living pretty well too. They tend to separate followers from the world that exists outside the group. They tend to say, you know, just listen to us. We'll tell you the truth. Don't listen to them. So the easiest way to spot a cult is probably they all have obsession with crystal balls and conspiracies, I like to say, you know. And that's American cults in a nutshell right there.
Right on. Now, suppose that you believe that, so one of our listeners, suppose that you believe that a close friend may be involved with a cult. Oh. What would be the best way to possibly help them get from under that influence?
Oh, I wish I could answer this with any kind of confidence. Generally speaking, the worst way is the way we usually do. We tend to say, if we can just get that person aside, maybe form an intervention or something like that, get them aside and try to talk logic to them and try to point out their problems, that'll do it. And it won't work. It really won't work. The other way, I think, is much better, but I can't say that it works easier. It works all the time easier. And that's simply I like to say, love them to death, love them out of the cult. They have found something in that cult that they weren't getting in their life. They have found a family. They have found understanding. They found people who agree with them. They found people who make them feel like they're part of a community. And even if you do pull somebody out of a cult, unless you replace that, they're going to go right back into that cult or some other cult because the underlying issues haven't been met. So the only thing I can say is, and believe me, it's hard, we just simply have to be there. We have to let them know that we're not going to, I don't want to say not judge them, because they have to know that we obviously don't agree with them, but we can still say, I don't think what you're doing is right, but I still love you. Mm. And be there for them. Offer that sense of community. Offer that sense of value to your friends.
Now, would you agree that there is a sense of there's this agenda to usher in this age of a hive mind that they're trying to eliminate individuality in as many ways as possible and bring in a form of groupthink globally? And this seems like they're trying to make a global cult out of the entire world.
I don't doubt it. I'm sure that tendency is there. I'm amazed at the number of Star Wars friends of mine actually start rooting for the Borg. That's the way we should be, the collective hive, you know?
Yeah.
And in some ways, let's face it, if people just want superficial happiness in life, boy, you join a group that meets all your needs, provides all your food, gives you a purpose for living and says, don't bother thinking. We'll tell you how to think. And it's just so much easier. And a lot of people just go along with that. I think it is there. I think it's there on a worldwide level. And I don't know what to do about it. And that probably is the most frustrating thing. The farther you get into this cultic life in America, you like to think that somehow we're outgrowing it. We're not. As far as I can see, it's as bad, maybe even worse than ever.
It's a difficult thing to try and come together, but still keep our individuality at the same time, you know?
Hardest thing in the world. That when Benjamin Franklin walked out of the meeting where the Constitution was drafted, people were saying, Dr. Franklin, what kind of a government did you give us? And he said, I gave you a democratic republic, if you can keep it. Boy, that's the key right there. It's hard. A sense of identity plus a sense of community. And it can only happen when we really respect each other. Mm. But those days are so far behind too. I remember the good old days. Well, I'm living up in Massachusetts, and the Speaker of the House was Tip O'Neill, and he was a flaming liberal, and everybody liked him from the Democrats down in Washington because he'd get things done. But while he was Speaker of the House, along comes Ronald Reagan, the arch conservative from California, and those two didn't agree with anything politically. They couldn't stand each other in terms of their political things, and yet they respected each other as people so much that they could go in, kick back, put their feet up, down a beer and tell Irish stories, you know. They respected each other, even though they didn't agree with anything else. I've never quite been able to understand why a person said, all of my friends have to think just like me, the same way I do. All of my neighbors, if I'm going to be open to them, they have to believe just like I do about everything. And it's terrible.
That's unfortunately the ideology that's being pushed here and the mentality that we're seeing in some of these agendas.
That's right.
You said, I think we gotta do our own thing and not participate with what doesn't resonate with us as much as possible, you know?
Yeah. And all we can do is just be true to ourselves and try to, well, it's an old, every religion preaches it. No religion does it, but they all preach it. Love one another. Mm. We somehow have to get back to that. And I don't know if we can make it or not. I sometimes despair.
Yeah. Well, I have hope, Jim. I think we're in fascinating times. It's definitely interesting, to say the least. And thank you so much for coming on today. This was fantastic.
Let the audience know
before you go where they can find your book. I know you have a couple of new things in the pipeline that you can tell us about.
Yeah, I've got a new book. I'm just finishing up the audio book on it now. And I should be getting the galleys of it next week. It should be coming out probably during the month of April. I think it's being typeset now, as a matter of fact. It's coming out next April. It's called Cosmo and Me, a spiritual seeker's journey from religion to spirituality. And that's coming out, and I'm really looking forward to that. I'm working on another book on near-death experiences. And this summer, we're going to be bringing out one on... out-of-body experiences and spirit guides and metaphysical things like that.
Oh, great.
But if anybody wants to follow all this, I urge them, go to my website, jimwillis.net, and down at the bottom of each page, it'll also give the icon for my Facebook page and my YouTube page. But what I especially like about saying go to jimwillis.net is that there's a contact page, and you and I talk to each other, and we can see each other, but we have no idea who's out there, who's listening or anything. And if people want to send me an email through the contact page, that they can do that. And I still try to answer all the emails that I can. And so I look forward to hearing from you. But there's a books page and an activities page, and then all the books are listed, and all you have to do is click on the cover of the book that looks interesting. It'll take you right to Amazon or right to the publisher or whatever. And reviews, both good and bad, we try not to edit too many of those, and so that's there. So jimwillis.net, that's probably the easiest way to do it.
Excellent, Jim, thank you so much. Fantastic as usual. We'll have to get you back on for the next one as well.
Oh, thank you, I sure appreciate it. Best of everything, and say hi to folks in Louisiana for me.
Oh, I will, definitely. Until next time, everyone have an excellent evening, and we'll see you again sometime next week.